flying saucers are real.
They've seen the aliens buzzing our missile silos.
The UFO phenomenon, either we like it or not, is already very much part of our reality.
That caused a compass needle to spin and spin.
And that's where the whole seed for the idea of underground bases at Dulce was planted.
They have very large eyes, and you know, I found their stare extremely difficult to bear.
Hi, everyone. This is Martin Willis. Joining me a little later on is Michael Loke with the news. And today is episode number 42 with Sam Maranto. We're going to be talking about skeptics. It's a really good interview. Hang in for that if you would. And a couple of quick announcements on our forum this week. When you hear this podcast, actually on April 12th through the 17th, we have Kathleen Marden, UFO abduction researcher, author, and lecturer. You may know her as Betty Hill's niece, Betty and Barney Hill. So a great guest on our forum, and I hope you check it out. You can get to our forum on our website, which is podcastufo.com. So, Michael, we have a little bit of news coming up. What's going on?
Oh, there's a lot going on, but I am very excited about talking with Kathleen Marden this weekend.
Yeah.
I hope a lot of people get in on that. But in the news, we have the Paradigm Research Group Citizen Hearing on Disclosure has updated its website to announce members of the panel and witnesses. Former CNN anchor Cheryl Jones will host press conferences and conduct some interviews as well. You can learn more about the hearing, including seeing the list of panel and witnesses, and also subscribe through the link in our show notes.
I mentioned last week that I'd like to go to that, and, you know, I'm thinking I'm going to go.
If you can, I think you should.
Why not? I think it will be really interesting. I talked with Peter Robbins. He's going to be there, and there's a lot of other people I'm going to meet up with. It should be a lot of fun. I'm really interested to hear what some of the witnesses have to say.
Do you think you're going to be able to squeeze in on the press conferences? And
I believe so, and I'm going to try to do a couple of interviews down there if I can.
Good. If I have a request.
Okay.
If you can, and I don't know if they even speak English, but there is a witness from the People's Republic of China, Dr. Sun Shirley, and I would love to hear more about the Chinese view on UFOs and what's going on in China.
All right. Hey, well, I'll try. Maybe I'll take a quick lesson in Mandarin.
I can teach you.
All right. Okay.
The U.S. Navy has released details about a new laser weapon, dubbed LAWS, being deployed on vessels to defend against drone and small sea craft. LAWS, or the laser weapon system, is able to disable a drone using about $1 worth of energy, as opposed to hundreds or thousands of dollars worth of ammunition used by traditional weapons. The system will be installed and operational in 2014 and will eventually be effective against incoming missiles as well. The link in our show notes will take you to NBC coverage of LAWS with video.
So they can save money destroying millions of dollars worth of equipment, drones, and things like that. That's great.
Yeah, but it's not our stuff. They specifically say it's good against Iranian gunships.
Is that right? Wow.
Yes, I specifically read that in an article. I'm actually very excited about this. You know why?
Because it's alien back engineering?
It very well might be, but the one thing I know for sure is if we say we have a laser weapon we can put on a ship and shoot down a drone
for a dollar,
then we have so much better laser weapons already out there. Whatever we admit to, we always have something much, much better in the wings.
I never looked at it that way.
Well, you have to be more excited about wanton destruction, I guess. Yeah. Myrtle Beach, South Carolina is hosting a new interactive exhibit called Encounters UFO Experience. It features replica aliens, ships, testimonials, and more. Check out local news coverage from WPDE through the link in our show notes. This answers the question we asked last week, which was, what exactly would you put in a UFO museum? Here's a chance for everybody to see what you can do.
I don't think they should put replicas in. I think they should grab Stephen Greer's little alien baby thing and put it in there.
Well, we'll be talking about that in just a second.
Okay.
But first, for all our northeastern U.S.-based listeners, Sunday, April 27 is the date for this year's Pinebush UFO Festival in Orange County, New York. More community festival than serious UFO symposium, this year's event will feature lectures by local authors on the subject of UFOs and premiere the new documentary In the Night Sky. Check the show notes for links to the festival and the trailer for In the Night Sky.
Do you happen to know anything about that movie? I didn't look at it.
It's a new documentary about UFOs that seem to be kind of concentrating in that area.
In the area of Pine Bush?
Yeah, that's what I got from the trailer.
Huh, how about that? I've never even heard of that. Sorry about that if we have any pine bush.
That's why this is news.
Yeah. Okay.
The Westall 66 mass UFO sighting, one of the most famous Australian sightings, is being commemorated with a new playground inspired by flying saucers. Among the 90 or so witnesses to the original 1966 event were dozens of school kids on a nearby cricket field. The playground will be surrounded with informational plaques describing the incident. You can read more about it through the link in our show notes.
You know, last week we talked a little bit about Maury Island, and this is one of those cases that has really fascinated me over the years because of all the witnesses and because of the situation where, you know, one of the teachers took some great pictures, but they confiscated her camera, not even her film, her whole camera. A girl went up near the landing, fell sick, was taken away by an ambulance, never saw again. It's not the exclusive landing in a playground. The 1994 Zimbabwe landing where there, I believe there was like 62 children and John Mack interviewed them. That's another incredible situation. They seem to like playgrounds for some reason.
There's a New Guinea encounter at a missionary school that Dr. Alan Hynek writes about. Have you ever read about that?
No, I haven't, no.
It's also very, that they seem, I think it occurs over two nights, and there's this craft that they think that maybe they're working on or they might be disabled. But they actually thought at the time that it was some kind of fancy American secret project. So they went out and they waved to it, and the people on the ship waved back.
Oh, you're talking about the Father Gill case?
Yeah, I believe that is the name.
Yes, right. Yeah, that is a real fascinating one. I think there's 38 witnesses there.
Yeah, they all kind of stick together in my mind.
Yeah.
The friendly aliens.
Yeah, they waved
to
them, that's right. And they also, I believe they waved a flashlight or something at them, and the craft simulated what they were waving. Yeah,
yes.
I mean, that's really
amazing. that's exactly what I'm talking about.
Yeah, that's awesome stuff.
And finally, Ben Radford reports on the quote-unquote breaking urgent news from Dr. Stephen Greer concerning his film Sirius, which is set to premiere on April 22nd. The piece discusses Greer's plea for additional crowdsourced funding to cover the costs of adding coverage of the alleged small alien body discovered in South America. The Discovery.com article is dated April 8th, but the blog post discussed is actually from last July. You can read Radford's article and learn more about the Sirius film release through the link in our show notes. I put this in because Ben Radford is thought of by many as a fairly reasonable skeptic, but this article seemed a little out of place since the blog post it cited is months old. Did you see it? What do you think about that?
No, I haven't. I haven't seen it, but I explain exactly. The blog post is saying urgent, but it's an old blog post? Is that what it is?
What it basically sounds like is as if Greer is making a last-minute plea for funding slash attempt to get some last-minute publicity for his film premiere. But the blog post that's mentioned, like I said, it's over 6 months old.
Wow.
I mean, these are the small alien bodies that I think we covered in maybe the first or second newscast that we did.
Yeah, the one we're going to steal and put in the Myrtle Beach, South Carolina Museum.
Yes, that exact one is what's being referred to. So, I mean, it's not a new story. So I found the post a little bit confusing, and I tried to look around to see if it was a repost, but Discovery didn't seem to indicate that in any way.
Well, it's a mysterious world.
It seems like if you're going to take pot shots at Stephen Greer, you don't have to mix around, you know, dates of blah, you know, pull up old information. It seems like there'd be an easier and more legitimate way.
Ah, I got it.
And I'm not to say that he's bad, but he has some pretty interesting views on disclosure and exopolitics, yep. You know, and it seems like this is kind of reaching.
Well, you know, you better watch what you say because one of his bodyguards is going to show up at your door.
That's fine with me.
Yeah,
I am.
You're ready, aren't you?
You know, I do the news every week after I teach a martial arts class. I am actually in boxing trunks.
Uh-huh. Okay.
And an old kung fu school that I used to work at T-shirt. So I am ready. I've got mouthpiece sitting by the door.
You hear us, Greer? All right. Hey, Michael. Thanks so much.
Well, thank you. You have a good show. I can't wait to hear your second talk here with Sam.
Yeah, we'll see you next week. Sam, how you doing?
I'm doing fantastic. And how are you doing?
I'm very well, thank you. And when we were having our email exchange, you were about to do a talk, I believe it was last Saturday, and it was titled Ufology in the Crosshairs. And when we spoke last time, we wanted to get you back on to talk about skepticism and all that, and I imagine this has something to do with it. So can you explain what that talk is about?
Yes, Ufology in the Crosshairs is a critical look at the subject and the critics. So what we're trying to do is internally, let's examine, for instance, the field as it is right now. What are the components? What really is, if you were to say, the ideals and individuals presenting those ideals? What seems to be valid? How can we put things into a context of, let's say, uniformly accepted? Some rudimentary, let's say, fundamentals that we should stick to, and then bringing it forward to the public. Something that's probably far more acceptable, especially on a first-time basis, seeing or hearing the information?
I think there is a lot of, I would say, disarray in ufology. Probably there's a lot of fringe people, and we're easy targets that way. I believe this is kind of what you're talking about.
Yes. What happens is media and the so-called skeptics have basically put front and center what we would probably not, as far as those people take this seriously and have spent so much time and dedicated so much time doing the research on. They put these individuals, the fringe component of ufology, into the forefront, and they shouldn't be there at all. Let's say every ology or every group of serious research has its fringe. And when I'm saying fringe, I'm not saying that in a positive sense. I'm saying it in a wacky sense. And you know what I'm saying.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And that seems to be the problem. There are some people that grasp onto every possible unusual component. And the vast majority of them, if not all of them, are just bunk. They really are bunk, and deservingly to be made fun of. But the thing is that doesn't involve us. Those people are trying to seriously bring this information forward, look at it scientifically, and have that information represent itself. In other words, let that evidence stand by itself, and let us do the legwork in assembling it.
We had a podcast guest a couple of podcasts ago. His name was Klaus Svahn. He was from Sweden. And they take a real scientific look at the reports, and they get about a report a day there. They have 10 people working in their office, huge library. And I know this is redundant to the listener that listens to all the podcasts, but what I got out of that podcast is there's very little ridicule in Sweden because they take such a scientific approach. I think that's a really good model to actually try to replicate.
Most countries outside of the United States, that is the consensus of the people, that this isn't something to be ridiculed, except, say, for instance, in Britain and possibly even Australia. But most other countries take this very seriously. I remember talking to Paula Harris, and she was explaining that this is the case. That, you know, in every other country, it seems that this phenomena is a given. They know the phenomena exists. As far as its source, as far as the exact location where these things originate from, well, that's a different scenario altogether. And I think that is where the so-called skeptics have a field day.
Now, you're talking about the phenomenon. We know that it exists. I mean, there's so much evidence that it exists. That's where the skeptics look away.
What they try to do is preclude the genuine nature of the phenomena because of what they like to say is the speed of light, and therefore cannot be because nothing could exceed the speed of light. And if something is coming from there, you know, they can't get here from there.
Hmm.
Really, first of all, who are they? And where is there? And I hear this all the time, even from people who are astronomers with PhDs, and that's almost like a catchphrase. They can't get here from there. And I don't know who's out there, you know, whoever's out there slicing the tires on their intergalactic dune buggies to assure that they can't get there from here or here from there. You know, the bottom line is you can't preclude the nature or the genuine nature of the phenomena. It's here. Whatever's here is here. How it got here has absolutely no relevance whatsoever to the fact that it is here.
And that's where science should start, is that it is here, in my opinion.
Yes, and this is a fundamental flaw in ufology. A fundamental flaw is to automatically throw in the extraterrestrial hypotheses before really making it solid, front and center, that the phenomena is genuine, that we're dealing with something that isn't make-believe, that isn't ours, that isn't conventional. It may be explained by a multitude of explanations. One of them, of course, is an extraterrestrial hypothesis. But the thing is, that comes after, first and foremost, you know, getting the evidence put forth that you do have this genuine phenomena, and it clearly is something that is non-conventional. That's where ufologists miss the boat, or people in the field miss the boat, and also this is where the so-called skeptics have just gone off the deep end.
Yeah, that's right. You know, I know this is probably another redundant phrase that I've said before, but when we're thinking in what we know of today's technology, what we know of today's science, math, etc., then we are limited by the speed of light, and that really does cause a lot of troubles. But that's when we're talking about extraterrestrial as being the answer, which there could be, as you say, a multiplicity of reasons that we are seeing these things.
Right. And first of all, we only have one way to look at things, and this is what I really get a kick out of, the human element, which, of course, the so-called skeptics have to really go and put a damper on the human element. And at every angle, there you know, our Brian Dunning's presentation, your brain sucks. Well, my brain doesn't suck. At times, it's a little bit, you know, disjointed and abstract, but my God, it doesn't suck. And nor does anybody else's, okay? Our brain functions quite fine if it's intact. And it's not convoluted by so-called skepticism. What these folks are trying to do is to diminish the value of our already well-used and served for heaven knows how many years brain. If our brain didn't work, we would have never made it outside of the cave. We would have walked out, fell on our face, or consistently gotten eaten. So at some point, you run out of humans. The bottom line is, no, the brain works, and it works quite well. The other problem, or other interesting thing that's showing up in the world of so-called skeptics is now Michael Shermer's patternicity. And his patternicity has a pattern within itself, and that in itself is a flaw. You and I had talked about the baloney kit that Carl Sagan had come up with to basically debunk and to find out what is science versus pseudoscience. And there's so many flaws to that. The first flaw is the one of the first components is the validity of what people are saying to see if it has a leaning towards something, that it may very well be a bias. And of course they have a bias because they have a vested interest in debunking. They have a vested interest in cynicism. And the last thing they want to see is this topic to take root, because it would just only change everything. And the paradigms that would change would be very painful to endure, especially with a so-called skeptic mind.
You're talking about Michael Shermer, and it's sometimes really hard to take his smirk. And I think he really uses that as a weapon. What's your take on that?
Oh, that's a given. In other words, his smirking is a way. Let's say, for instance, you're 2 feet tall. If you're 2 feet tall and you're smirking, you are now a giant in the eye of the person looking at you, because the first thing you're saying is, what the hell is this guy smirking about? He thinks he's got something over you. One way or another, if he does or does not, he is giving the appearance that he does. It also is an appearance that, oh, my God, you're such an idiot. That's just irritating. But irritating again, going back to the whole idea of skepticism, you know, skepticism is very important as far as a critical part of the investigative researcher's diet. We need that substance, but then again, it's that occasional nut that you have to give a rehashing to, because the bottom line, if you don't, it will erode your intestinal fortitude.
I like that. I had a thread started on my forum that was pretty interesting. We were kind of debating skepticism, and one of the things that I said, the only thing that we can really do is keep our side of the street clean. And I also went further on to say that I believe that skepticism was based on fear, whether it showed anger or it showed ego. Like, for instance, someone would say, if this was true, I should know it, or I would know it, so it can't be true, you know, the proclamations. And so, but I think all of that, like you said, the paradigm change, it's all based on that type of fear.
You hit it on the head. That four-letter word, I can't help but feel, from a social point of view, and this is a social problem, that is the foundation of it. That is the crux, if you were to say, of the issue. That is the problem, fear. A paradigm change, whether it's simply a moving or a loss of a loved one, anytime you have these change, especially a paradigm, is a very emotional and painful experience. Mm-hmm. And when you look at the real phenomena as far as socially, it is also a huge economic issue. If you have things that are flying about the sky, and if in fact they are in the hands of government agencies, contractors, whatever, that means that at some point they may very well be able to understand what's going on there. And if they somehow harness that phenomena, whatever propelling it or whatever it's doing, anti-gravitic or whatever, the bottom line is now you've just changed the economic structure from an oil base to something that would be entirely different and who knows what. Now, these paradigms, economically and socially, and they're tied together, socioeconomic, they've happened throughout history, and they happen on micro scales and macro scales too. I mean, just picture the whaling industry. Mm-hmm. When that went by the wayside with the advent of oil. And also just, you know, just think of one after another, these different economic paradigms and shifts in populations and paradigm as far as thought, realizing that we are not the center of the universe. I mean, you know, these things do take place. And you always watch who's holding back that information, or who's trying to basically derail it from coming forward. And it's always those who have a fear factor, because they are going to either perceive to lose, or are definitely going to lose. There's some loss involved, and that loss is control. And really, that's what it's about, control. Controlling the pulpit, controlling the paradigm, controlling what dictates the illusion of reality. Mm-hmm. And the significance of media, and that's the modern-day pulpit. I mean, that's where you get reality fix. You turn on the television, and there is the news. Mm-hmm. And you're seeing what is happening in the world and how you're supposed to feel and what you're supposed to take if you're not feeling right, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And it's all manipulated and orchestrated. Mm-hmm. Now, you have something coming along that is obviously here, and we don't know where it's from. and one of those components may be an extraterrestrial hypothesis, then, boy, a lot of things that we've been told are obviously wrong. The other thing is, who's really in charge? And if you have something that could maneuver at will and violate airspace and some of the most secure places on this earth, how safe are we? There's a lot of things that come up, and fear is at the root, the crux of all of that, and you hit it on the head.
I think there's really three types of people, and one is someone who's interested in this, takes a real serious look at it, or just have some type of fascination with it one way or another. Then there's the skeptics, and then there's the majority of the people out there who either don't really care or never really take time to look any further than their doorstep that there could be something going on, or they don't even really care if there's other beings out there or whatever. And it's really the media is the one that leads those people in the middle, really, the ones that don't really care.
And they're the bulk. Strangely enough, mm-hmm. you know, they will say, well, 51% or whatever, and you get these figures thrown, who knows which is correct, and who really cares, as far as how many people. And, of course, they use the word believe. And anybody in this field that does research, you don't believe. You either have an idea, you know, you have an opinion. The last thing you do is believe. But for the average person out there who knows nothing and has to take this information on faith, of course they have to believe, strangely enough and sadly enough. But if they put their brain to work and they do some analytical process, they can make a rational deduction. And today, most people don't go outside and look up in the sky, mm-hmm. sadly enough. They only look straight forward. And the reason why they don't have to look up in the sky, because odds are there isn't anything up there going to eat them. Now, that scenario years ago, when they were out walking around, you know, walking out of the cave, and they didn't fall flat on their face because their brain didn't suck. And they were looking for things that may be sucking on their brain. So they looked up. And today we don't have that need. So basically we're very linear. We have a routine. We get up in the morning. We have our cup of coffee by a certain time. Do other functions by a certain time. Hopefully if things are working well. If you had your fix of skepticism. And then you're out in your job doing your routine. You do that your 5 days a week for most people. And they don't want to think. They just want their football. They just want their 9-to-5. They want their lunch break. They want their 401k. And they want their Fox News or MSNBC. Again, it has to be one of two sides of a dichotomy to paint this illusion. You always got to have that. You always have to have two sides. You have to have dichotomy. Mm-hmm. And that's how you create illusions. So I say the average person doesn't give a hoot. In fact, I don't know how many times I have people ask me and say, why do you do this? I mean, it's not, and I find that interesting. Like, why do you do that? Don't you find NASCAR more interesting? You know, I mean, this is the type of stuff that goes on. And even family members. It's heck, it's really a rough thing to be a ufologist and have a family. It's a very tough field. Where's the gain? It's not monetary, and it's definitely not fame. You might get on television now and then. And the bottom line is, it's greater than anybody could possibly ever imagine, because you're delving into the greatest mysteries that we should all, as our birthright, be allowed to know. And that is who we are, what we are, and why we are, and our place in this wonderful universe.
Really nicely said. I talked earlier about the forum and the little debate that we had going on there. The one phrase that was on there is like waging war against skepticism. Is that something that's viable? Or if so, how would it be done?
Is it viable? It should be viable, but it's crucial. We have to, because there's a war against us. And when I say it's a war against us, it's even against the minions that are involved in this process. They're not even aware that there's there's a serious offensive on basically derailing what would be, you know, genuine science, potentially derailing our knowledge. We've been, on this subject alone, we've been thrown back by the skeptical camp, or so-called skeptical camp, hundreds of years. And it's only getting worse. It's not getting better. It's getting worse. I could see that we need to engage them at the university levels because there are CSI groups, these critical thinking groups, and clubs and skeptical groups. They get their little pins and books and all sorts of stickers and paraphernalia and all sorts of cool stuff. They're very well entrenched in universities. And the other thing is they're well represented in all of media, major media, and NBC. And I've dealt with this scenario. You can't even have a show about UFOs without a documentary, without some balance. When you hear balance, you know what's going to happen is they're going to forfeit quality evidence to just have some guy come on there saying that because it's lights in the sky, it could be anything, you know.
Yeah.
But they have these mantras, and you could listen. In fact, sadly enough, I listened probably about six times to one of your interviews with the so-called skeptic, and the mantras that repeatedly over and over and over again. He sounds like a great guy, but he's a minion. He fell into this camp, and he's just repeating things and making proclamations about such things as Roswell being a myth, and mm-hmm. that the whole UFO phenomena just started in the 40s. Call it whatever you want. It started at the advent of humanity, more than likely. This stuff has been a part of the human culture hand in hand throughout history. Mm-hmm. And it's not just a Western culture, Eastern culture, or, you know, some backwoods headhunting group that has seen these things. They've been entrenched with humanity since day one, at least from my perspective. And I'll qualify that. You know, I don't go along with everything in Ancient Aliens, of course. I mean, just because you don't know what it is or what looks strange, it's extraterrestrial. That's bunk, too. But then again, one has to realize, and you have to have a discerning view when you watch this stuff, that 43 minutes of commercial fillers could be filled with a lot of interesting things, and the truth doesn't have to be anywhere near it. Getting back to the position as far as a war on skepticism, and we should maintain a very, let's say, highbrow, or at least a very professional mannerism, taking the high road is really something that we should do from a tactical advantage. And you say, well, that isn't very genuine. Some people say, well, no, you have to do it because it's the right thing. Right, my eye. Now, the bottom line, it's all tactics. And don't deceive ourselves. We do it from a tactical advantage, and it is the proper thing to do. But in the same token, you don't go into a barroom brawl wearing a top hat. Know where and what to do. Limit your involvement, but never, ever walk away other than standing tall. You have to engage. You do so, and you do it till there is a victory. Now, sometimes they have these wolf packs, say, for instance, the internet forums, and we had talked about this before. Individuals will jump and glob onto you the minute you come up with some interesting concept, and then you'll have six or seven people, some of them sounding like, you know, it could be just one individual. And I believe the term you said was called puppeting at one time?
Yeah, it's called puppeting when one person has a bunch of personalities on a forum and they all back each other up.
I call that psychopathic.
It's the same thing, yeah.
Yeah, it's like somebody doesn't have a life, you know.
Exactly.
This person cannot breathe out of their nose, and they, you know, they haven't had anything resembling a real meal in days, and it's sad.
Yeah, we're ready to wrap it up here, but one of the things before we go is I want you to say why you call them skeptics.
Skeptics. You know, the funny thing is, when you're at war and you're really just getting, there is no compassion or empathy. It may appear that way, but believe me, there isn't. They're getting every gouge, kick, and stab every way possible. One of the more amusing ways to do it is right from the get-go. Say UFOlogy or UFology, because it emphasizes UFO, what of course is odd or unusual, and instead of ology, something that may add credence to something, the study thereof. This is why I say SK Eptics. It's almost like some sort of lubricant. and that's what they are trying to do, is trying to basically lubricate a bunch of garbage and shove it in, out, whatever, our brains and other orifices or whatever. And I'm tired of it. It's insane. And we need to stand tall. We need to take a position. I talked to Rich Dolan today, and he was saying, yes, it's so true. We can't be trying to make these strides and only to be pushed back 1,000 times further every time we do. They're organized. We need to be organized. We need to be intellectually militant. I'm a pacifist on every front. But God, if somebody tries to cross me, engage me, and thinks they're going to get the high ground by smiling at me, I'll make them go back to their mama crying.
All right. Well, Sam, you've been absolutely great. Thank you for spending time with us, and you're a real asset to UFOlogy. I'm just kidding.
Thank you. Had a great time.
That's it for our show today. I hope you enjoyed it. Make sure you check out our new forum. And also remember, Kathleen Martin is going to be a guest star on the forum between Saturday, April 13th and Wednesday, April 17th. You can like us on Facebook or you can follow us on Twitter. Thanks again. And remember to keep your eyes on the sky, and see you next week. Don't.